wanna talk about it. Colonize mind. We tend to judge others by ourselves. When Proudhon talks about the sovereignty of the reason, of justice, as the only basis on which freedom, true society, can exist, he must necessarily use his own experience as reference. Because he possessed an independent thought process, he had to think that others did as well. But Alice has shown us how thought gets stuck in us when our thought process is commandeered into the objectives of those who, whether consciously or not, use us, beginning when we are infants, for their purposes. And when we synthesize her work with that of Martin Bernal, Karl Popper, John Boswell, and Emanuel Wallerstein, it allows us to see that there was conscious planning. A conscious plan to utilize the methods that the emerging Plato's tribesmen applied to their children. This is child-rearing, called child-rearing, to their goal of creating a centralized state, i.e. to instill obedience not just in their children, but in all they, the global statesmen, deemed subjects.
What low? The master race idea, genetically disposed to rule the world. Down low, down low, a future full of isolated, full of isolated boys and girls. Upload a two-party system. Lesser of two dangers, illusion of choice. Down low, down low, a veiled form of fascism, fascism. Nothing really ever changed. You never had a voice.
Emanuel Wallerstein provides important background for our discussion with Proudhon. Proudhon's argument for our evolution. Quote from Emanuel Wallerstein: once the revolutionary upsurge of the late 18th century transformed the language of equality into a cultural icon, once challenges to authority everywhere became commonplace, the disparity of theory and practice could no longer be ignored. The need to contain the implications of this cultural claim, and thereby to tame the now dangerous classes, became a priority of those who held power. The construction of the liberal state, and my interjection, Wallerstein uses this term as we use centralized bureaucratic state. Continuing, the construction of the liberal state was the principal framework that was built to limit the claim, and he's talking of the claim of equality. The elaboration of modern ideologies was in turn an essential mechanism in the construction of the liberal state. The great symbolic gesture of the French Revolution was the insistence that titles no longer be used. Not even that of Monsieur and Madame. Everyone was to be called citoyen, citizen. This gesture was intended to demonstrate the repudiation of traditional hierarchies, the incrustation of social equality in the new society that was being constructed. The French Revolution came to an end. Titles were reinstituted, but the concept of citizen, if not its use as a title of address, survived. It did more than survive. It thrived. It became the rhetorical bedrock of the liberal state. The concept of citizen was intended to be inclusive, but the other face of the inclusiveness of citizenship was exclusion. The way to define citizenship narrowly in practice while retaining the principle in theory. The way to define citizenship narrowly in practice while retaining the principle in theory is to create two categories of citizens. The effort started with Abbé Sieyès just 6 days after the fall of the Bastille. Sieyès proposed a distinction between passive and active rights, between passive and active citizens. Without blinking an eye, Sieyès then added that equality of political rights is a fundamental principle, but presumably only for active citizens, without which privilege would reassert itself. On October 29, 1789, the National Assembly translated this theoretical concept into a legal decree that defined active citizens as those who paid a minimum of 3 days' wages in direct taxation. Property became the prerequisite of active citizenship. As Rosen Vallon, writing in 1985, points out, quote, if reason is sovereign, men cannot invent laws, they must discover them. The notion of capacity finds its logic in this framework, unquote. The fact that Wallerstein does not bust Rosen Vallon, not only for failing to credit Proudhon for this thought that Wallerstein is attributing to Rosen Vallon, but for using it out of context, and therefore using it against Proudhon, using it against the man he stole it from, tells us that he has not devoted much time to what is property, in which Proudhon uses this very language. Quotes from Proudhon, the more ignorant man is, the more obedient he is, and the more absolute in his confidence in his guide. But it being a law of man's nature to conform to rule, that is to discover it by his powers of reflection and reason, man reasons upon the commands of his chiefs. Now, such reasoning as that is a protest against authority, a beginning of disobedience. At the moment that man inquires into the motives which govern the will of his sovereign, at that moment, man revolts. The substitution of the scientific and true law for the royal will is accomplished only by a terrible struggle. Whatever form it takes, monarchic, oligarchic, or democratic, royalty, or the government of man by man, is illegitimate and absurd. The legislative power belongs only to the reason, methodically recognized and demonstrated. To attribute to any power, whatever, the right of veto or of sanction, is the last degree of tyranny. Justice and legality are two things as independent of our approval as is mathematical truth. To compel, they need only to be known. To be known, they need only to be considered and studied. The executive power belonging properly to the will cannot be confided to too many proxies, i.e., my comment, we all must have wills. That, says Proudhon, is the true sovereignty of the nation. Unquote. The fact that Wallerstein does not bust Rosen Vallon for failing to credit Proudhon, we might find odd if we didn't know that to call oneself a Marxist as he does, one is almost required to be dismissive of Proudhon. This was communicated to me very clearly by my few years in the sociology department he and Terence K. Hopkins founded at SUNY, State University of New York, at Binghamton. Wallerstein appends this note. Quote from Wallerstein, the theoretical justification was that a criterion of eligibility for the vote was independence of judgment. It followed that and he's quoting Quinifi, it followed that all those who were considered to be dependent on someone else in the exercise of their will, such as minors, women, or servants, were excluded from the suffrage, unquote. This was the origin of what would later be called the régime censitaire, and that means qualified, so it's referring to the term a qualified regime. Competence of judgment continued to be the main justification for denying access to the suffrage. And we've been quoting Emmanuel Wallerstein, his book, The Modern World System 4, Centrist Liberalism Triumphant, 1789 to 1914. Here we see the political playbook of Plato, so full of cons, being quietly slipped in with a head nod to the best should rule, quote unquote. Here we see that this had begun to be put in place immediately. I mean, we're talking like instantly. That means some planning had already occurred. In our reading today, we'll see that Proudhon recognized this at once. Quote from Proudhon, the definition of sovereignty was derived from the definition of the law. The law, they said, is the expression of the will of the sovereign. Then, under a monarchy, the law is the expression of the will of the king. In a republic, the law is the expression of the will of the people. Aside from the difference in the number of wills, the two systems are exactly identical. Both share the same error, namely, that the law is the expression of a will. It ought to be the expression of a fact, unquote from Proudhon. And particularly now with our synthesis of Alice Miller, Martin Bernal, Karl Popper, John Boswell, with Emmanuel Wallerstein, can we see this? See that immediately in the revolution's aftermath, a tiny few were hatching a plan to fix in place class, which meant the capturing and containing of justice, the installation of totalitarianism.
Showing.